This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Richard Pollock filling in the host chair this morning with Ezra Ginsberg, David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com, and the one, the only, the station, Michael Brian Remus. We have a great show for you guys today. This is our last show of the summer, quote-unquote. We're 2 hours. Obviously, we're starting from 10 a.m., going through to noon, and then the replay from noon until 2. Next week, back to the regular time slot, 12 to 3. We'll be in the 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. time slot throughout the entire NHL season. And the only time that the only times that we will not be on from 12 to 3 will be if there's a Winnipeg Jets game, at which point we'll be on 6 hours before game time. So we're really excited to go back to 3 hours next week. Doesn't mean we don't like being on for 2 hours, but we're even more excited to be on for 3 hours starting next week. And really what that means, guys, is NHL season is just around the corner. Before I get to you guys, outlining today's show, we're going to talk at length about Team Canada. Team Canada orientation camp last week. Forwards, defensemen, goalies, lots to talk about. We're going to give you our teams. We're going to discuss why we picked those players and what we think will be the eventual Team Canada roster for Sochi 2014. We're going to talk about Dustin Byfuglien, his time with the USA orientation camp. We're going to talk about the Jets' defense as a whole. We're going to talk about the contract extension given to Peter Chiarelli. We're going to talk about the rumors surrounding Ryan Miller. And we're going to talk to Dan Wood, the color commentator for the Anaheim Ducks radio broadcasts, about the return of Teemu Selänne to the NHL for one final season. Before we get into the goalies and what Team Canada is going to do on that front, good morning, Ezra.
Good morning, Richie. Yeah, I mean, this is our last summer show, and it's been fun. But I think next week we're going back to our regular time slot, and, you know, we've got training camp coming up, and, you know, we're pretty much getting back into the grind here. You know, a lot of the Jets are in town now. Some people have seen them play at the Iceplex, practice at the Iceplex. And, you know, Dave's on board, Drew's out of town this week. And, you know, we have one last week before we get back into the grind, so to speak.
David?
You know, it's fun to be on my second consecutive Legal Curve Hockey Show this week. And like Ez says, you can feel the change. People are seeing Jets around town, and the excitement is in the air. The buzz is back. People are, you know, we're getting stories again about the Winnipeg Jets, which, of course, you can read on a little site called IllegalCurve.com in our morning papers. And so it's good to be back on the show, and we're going to have a lot to talk about today.
And there'll be ample time. We're going to talk about the Jets in the second hour, and there'll be ample time, obviously, to talk about the Jets throughout the NHL season. But, you know, first, guys, I want to talk about Team Canada. And I was away last week, so I wasn't, you know, when the orientation camp was going on, I wasn't, you know, right into it. But at the same time, you know, the camp is closed now, and I think, as you saw this week on numerous websites, TSN had their projected teams. Everybody put out what they believed to be the what they thought might be the Team Canada that we see in 2014 in Sochi. So I want to do the same, and I want to break it up by position, because I think, you know, you can't give as much time to goalies to me as you can to forwards, because there's 14 forwards who are going to make the roster, and there's three goalies. So I'm going to start goalie-wise. And I want to start with you, Ezzy. I want to hear who you have as your three goalies, and I want to hear why you have them as your three goalies.
Well, starting off, I think that this year is a little bit different for Team Canada in the goaltending position. Martin Brodeur is most likely not in the picture. He wasn't invited to the orientation camp, and that doesn't necessarily mean that he's not going to make the team. As far as a lot of people go, and a lot of, you mentioned, you know, lists, and a lot of people have Cam Ward on their list. Richie, I think you might have him on your list. So that doesn't necessarily mean Brodeur is out, but Brodeur has been a staple of Team Canada for a really long time. Even though Luongo was the starting goalie in 2010, Brodeur was always there. And, you know, you have a situation now where I think it's unquestionable, and some people don't believe that Roberto Luongo still has game-stealing ability, but I do believe he does. And I think that our judgment of Luongo has been clouded a little bit over the years because of the fact that he's been splitting time with Corey Schneider. But for me, Roberto Luongo is the starting goalie of this team.
Okay.
And as far as the five goalies that were picked, I think it's great that Braden Holtby and Corey Crawford were invited to orientation camp. But for me, it's Carey Price, Roberto Luongo, and Mike Smith. Now, I'm not saying that if Cam Ward plays well, he won't be invited. But for me, it's for sure Luongo. It's for sure Carey Price. And I'm going based on who is invited to orientation camp. Now, I think Cam Ward, I was mentioning this off air, I think Cam Ward is arguably the best goalie out of the six that we're talking about here. He's had injury problems.
For people's knowledge, you know, the five goaltenders invited to Team Canada's orientation camp were Corey Crawford, Braden Holtby, Roberto Luongo, Carey Price, and Mike Smith. Now, Ezzy, just so I can make sure I hear you on this one, your starter is Roberto Luongo. Who's your backup, and then who's your third?
I think if I would go, I would say that Mike Smith would be the third, and then I'd have Carey Price backing up Roberto Luongo. Now, I do think, I know it's kind of a cop-out to say this, but I do think Cam Ward has a very good chance. I truly believe the only reason Cam Ward wasn't invited was because he was injured last year.
And that's a factor. I think people might be out there saying, well, why are you talking about the third goalie on Team Canada? Well, let me tell you something. Back when Team Canada went in 2002, Curtis Joseph's a starting goalie. They have a poor performance, against the Swedes.
Yep. That was the first game, I believe, the first or second game.
Lost like 5-1.
Yeah. And Sundin had a hat trick.
Something like that. I don't remember what it was. I can tell you this, though. Pat Quinn thinks about it, and you know that basically tarnished his reputation. Sorry, his relationship with Curtis Joseph, who's goalie in Toronto at the time. He went to Marty Brodeur, and then they ended up sticking with Brodeur, you know, throughout the remainder of the tournament. There was a lot of talk about going to Eddie Belfour there. And Eddie Belfour was the third goalie that year. So don't discount the fact that the third goalie isn't important. Think about the World Cup in 2006. Marty Brodeur was a starter. Roberto Luongo needed to come in. It was important. And you look at it back in 2010. I mean, the goalie situation can change considerably. You have Brodeur, you have Luongo. So this time, I mean, the third goalie could be just as important sometimes as the first one. So, you know, we hear, you have Roberto Luongo as your starter, you have Carey Price as your backup, you have Mike Smith as your third goaltender. One thing to note about Smith, and I don't have him on my team, but he's a really good puck mover, and I think that's going to be important on the big ice, especially without the restrictions behind the net.
I want to mention one thing before Dave gives his picks for goaltenders for Team Canada. I think it's absolute baloney that people are worried about the goaltender position for Canada. These three goalies are all top-notch goalies. Now, I'm not
but
saying...
But hold on, but they're,
I'm
not but, saying, but they're not Jonathan Quick,
hold on,
they're
hold
not
on.
Pekka Rinne.
Hold
They're
on.
Not Henrik Lundqvist. I'm concerned.
I'm not concerned. Roberto Luongo, just a couple of years ago, went to the Stanley Cup Finals. Sure, they didn't win. So, I mean, and he won the gold in 2010, so he's got the experience. First off, I would say that Canada relies probably less on their goalie than other teams as well. So they don't necessarily... Luongo doesn't have to steal games.
That's fair.
But I think that one thing to note here, I'm going with all veterans here. And Braden Holtby, I think, has proven himself to be an excellent goaltender for the Capitals. And mm-hmm. Corey Crawford did a really good job winning the Cup this past year.
Yeah,
but Team Canada, you should Stevie Y and his management staff. Braden Holtby, I think, maybe in 2014, he's kind of a guy who's on the radar in the future.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people that you know that were tweeting, you know, Braden Holtby. I think he should be the third goalie. But
this is an action-packed
tournament. You need the veterans.
Let me get in there. That's my problem with that. The third goalie could play. So I don't want it to be some kind of an apprenticeship.
Yes.
I want the third goalie to be able to play. And you better not be worried about the third goalie. Dave, who are your goalies?
Well, I was going
to
say, just to jump in on that point, I think that's the reason why you have him at these camps. Because you're giving him the experience that way as opposed to saying, okay, you're 100% right. If you have to go to him, you don't want to be going to your third guy and saying, well, you have no significant experience on a stage of this level. So you can't do that. To my picks, right now I've got Luongo, Price, and Ward. I'd probably give it to Carey Price simply for the fact that he skipped his honeymoon to attend the ball hockey camp.
If you don't think that Team Canada management appreciates that, then
yeah. But you know what? Like it's a tough one. Like I'm with you in the sense that you look at. I'm not overly concerned about Team Canada's goaltenders, but it's certainly not the strength of this team. Obviously,
who's your starter?
Luongo.
So you both have Luongo as your starter.
Yeah,
who's your backup?
My backup is. This is the reason why I want to see how Ward does, obviously, because
sure.
and that's the critical part about when you're selecting a team, you know, so far in advance, right? Because you don't know there's so many moving parts. I mean, obviously, this is so contingent on injury. We saw what happened with Claude Giroux, you know, breaking his finger and all that stuff. So like, there's so much that could happen between now and then. But as of right now, I would probably go with Carey Price as my backup and Ward as my third.
So the two of you have Luongo and Price as your 1-2, and then the difference right now is Smith is for Ezzy's third And you have Ward is your third. So,
it's amazing, Richie, how Fleury is not even in the conversation for most people anymore.
And you don't know. I mean, you're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. And to that point, as you don't know. I mean, what if Fleury dominates the first half of the season? Then he could be the starting goalie.
Absolutely. And there is a lot of fluid, you know, with those selections.
I'll give you my picks now. But, I mean, I have concerns about the fragile nature of the players we're talking about on Team Canada. I mean, Roberto Luongo was fragile. I think that is evident. We talked about Fleury. He's not invited, but he's fragile. Carey Price, who I love, is somewhat fragile too, I think. And then so the question is, I think Cam Ward, who isn't invited, is probably the most consistent if you look at his stats and his performance year after year. And take into account the fact that Carolina's defense, to me, has always been below average when he's been there. At most, average. He inspires confidence in me. But because of the injury issues, my starting goalie would be Carey Price. I think he's the most talented of the netminders. I think he gains confidence from that. And I think his international experience, which Luongo has as well, obviously at a better level, but Price has the international experience as well, on the big ice, I think that helps too. So Carey Price is my starter. Roberto Luongo would be my backup. And Cam Ward would be my third goalie. That's how I would have it. So, I mean, we have the same top two there. Top three, too, Dave. But I have Carey Price as my starter over Roberto Luongo. We could go either way. And I just feel like I have more confidence in Carey Price as a netminder than I do Roberto Luongo.
Right, and that's exactly what we were talking about before. You want to know that if Roberto Luongo struggles, that Carey Price is going to be able to come in and you have no worries or concerns that he's going to be able to get the job done. And I don't have that concern about Mike Smith either. He wasn't part of the previous Olympic teams, but he has experience at the World Championships.
One good year?
It's true. He only had one good year, and in previous years he was a backup.
One good year. I mean, you're putting that guy in the heart of Canada's repeat attempt at the gold medal in Mike Smith's hands. Like, it's not for me.
If it's not Cam Ward, that's the option, right? I mean, Cam Ward or...
Yeah, but you know what, again...
I feel better about Hopi than I do about Smith, to be honest. And that system that Smith played in Phoenix, I don't know. I mean, I want to hear what you guys have to... I want to hear what the public has to say. Remus, if we get people tweeting at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Remus will read it on air and we'll see what the public has to say. After the break, we're going to talk about the defenseman. And this is where it gets interesting, because right as we talked about off-air before the show, what do you do about the left side? We're going to talk about that after the break on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Richard Pollock with Ezra Ginsberg, David Manuk, and Michael Brian Remus. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Remo?
Yeah, we asked listeners out there to give give their thoughts on Twitter. Tweet us at Illegal Curve on who you think the Canada's goaltenders should be. Personally, never asked me, but that's I'm okay with that. But I'll read what the listeners have to say.
Hold on. Before we get to the listeners, Michael,
yeah,
who are your goalies?
I've said this on the warm-up, actually. I have Luongo as number one.
Why?
Because I think that he was the guy last time. I think you got to give it to him again. I think he's got the Stanley Cup experience, and he's got the gold medal experience. I think he is their best choice at goaltender. Number two is, I think, Corey Crawford. He's a defending Stanley Cup champion goaltender. And then number three, I got Mike Smith. He's a steady presence back there.
I'll tell you, those goalies would be heart attack, and heart attack.
What do you mean? I
understand the Luongo because, you know, that Canada's done that with Brodeur. With the guy who started the last time, you bring him back. I understand that. I don't trust Corey Crawford and Mike Smith. I'm just honest.
I know they don't trust him, but Corey Crawford, he's the defending Stanley Cup champion. Some people on his own team said he should have been the Conn Smythe. I think.
What do you want him to say?
I don't know.
My problem with the Crawford thing is, when you're Chicago and you're the best team in the league on paper, you're playing against teams that aren't the best team on paper. But in these tournaments, everybody's the best team. I mean, everybody's so good. I know Canada's probably got a little bit of an edge, but not much.
Okay, well, we'll read the tweets here. DJ Crowden on Twitter. No, we don't know if he's related to Gary Crowden, but he says, Price had too many terrible games last season for me. When he's off, he's really off, and I wouldn't trust him in a single elimination game. And Grenge Greg tweets from 1994, Luongo Price Flurry. All right. And
Luongo Price Flurry, okay.
J My MS says, honestly, I'd start Holpe on the basis of what have you done for me lately? Price backup, then Luongo.
So, I mean, interesting. That's the thing. And I bet you if we do this, and we're going to do it, you know, and right before they pick the team, in the late in 2013, what's going to happen is you're going to have different defensemen. I'm sorry, goaltenders. You're going to have different guys. You're going to have probably, it's possible that you'll have three different goaltenders picked by any of us based on the performance over the first bit of the season combined with injuries and everything else.
Of course, like you said before, and it's 100% true, it's like, you know, we're not even talking about Marc-Andre Fleury, but if he goes out there and is phenomenal, you know, I mean, then he gets himself into the conversation. So this could change in 3 weeks.
I think that's, it's fluid. Goaltender, it's going to be something, a fluid situation. Defenseman, I think, is different. And I think defenseman, you really have three to five slots that are locked down guys. And I think then you get to the question of who are those bubble guys? When I look at Team Canada's defense, and I'll give you my defenseman in a little bit, as he will start with you, but I see holes on the left side, and we've talked about it before. The second left side defenseman and the third left side defenseman. And the concern I have is this. The seventh and eighth defenseman may conceivably be better than the fourth and fifth defenseman on this team. But can they adjust to playing the opposite side? Now, if you remember last time, the pairings, I believe, down the stretch in Vancouver were Pronger and Niedermeyer, Doughty, Keith, and then Boyle, Weber. So what you had is Boyle and Weber, you had the two right side guys, one moving to the left and playing quite well. So can you have that on one pairing? Can you have it on two, or can you have it on none? I think that's the question. But first I want to hear, Ezzy, who you have as your Team Canada defense for 2014.
Everybody knows who the locks on this team are going to be. It's, I mean, a blind person that, you know, hadn't ever watched hockey could tell this, right? The locks that I have are Duncan Keith, Shea Weber, Drew Doughty, and Mark Stahl. And I think everybody has those locks.
Hold on. No, I think Doughty, Keith, and Weber are locks in everybody's team. I don't think I've seen yet a defense that doesn't have any of those three guys. Mark Stahl, talk about him.
I think he's a lock for me, and I realize that he's had injury problems, but I think he's definitely a lock. I have PK Subban on my team, and I picked him about 6 months ago, and not a lot of people had him on their list. Now almost everyone's got him on their list.
Yeah, you were above the head of the curve there.
So I think Chris Letang is a guy that I'm taking over Dan Boyle, and the only problem really that I see with that is that Chris Letang didn't have a good playoffs, mm-hmm. Even though he's a very good offensive defenseman. I've got him on there. And one of the guys that I have on my team that was on the 2010 team that is replacing, someone who's picked by a lot of people because he's a pretty solid skater on the international ice is Jay Bouwmeester. But I've actually got Brent Seabrook on my team again, and a lot of people have him because you could say that he's regressed a little bit since the 2010 Olympics. So really, if you look at who I have that maybe is different than a lot of people's list, I've got I don't have Bouwmeester and I don't have Boyle on the team, and I've got Chris Letang and Seabrook.
So what are your pairings? I mean, what Steve Yzerman said, it's likely going to be three goaltenders. We broke that down in the first segment of the show. By the way, you're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Then you have eight defensemen. They've expanded the roster since 2010, so eight defensemen and 14 forwards. So, Ezzy, if you have to put your top six, who are your top six and then who are your extra two if they are playing game one tomorrow?
Subban and Letang would probably be the extras.
Okay.
And, I mean, you could put Duncan Keith with Seabrook, even though they're both right shots.
No, Keith's a left shot, so you can put them together. Yeah.
Sorry, that's correct. And then I don't know what the other pairings would really be. Maybe Doughty and Keith together. I'd go with those six guys as my starters.
Dave?
I had Keith and Weber. As a pairing. I had Stahl and Doughty. Okay. I had Bouwmeester and Pietrangelo. And then I had Boyle and Subban as my extra two. And the reason why I went with Boyle over like Letang, mm-hmm. is because I saw Letang as interchangeable with Subban. And I kind of like Subban on the team. You know, so I was kind of torn as to those two. But overall, I kind of thought to myself, I'd rather have Boyle's kind of steady experience. And if you need that. And calming influence on that team as opposed to someone who might not necessarily know what to do on that stage.
So your second pairing is who again?
Second pairing was Stahl and Doughty.
Okay, so Stahl has been on, and I have him on my team too, and I'll talk about that in a second, but Stahl has been on both your teams. See, to me, that was a hard decision for me.
Well, you know,
and only because of the injury issues. I mean, Mark Stahl played great for Team Canada in the World Juniors, and he's a lockdown defenseman. I like him in the New York Rangers. He has admitted that he cannot see out of his eye as well as he could before, obviously, his eye injury. So he hasn't got back to 100% recovery. And we've seen players like Brian Berard, for example, who, you know, arguably weren't the same player after that injury. And the question is, what's his peripheral vision like? Can he perform at the level he did before his injury? So if I have Mark Stahl on as the guy before the injury, I 100% have him on the team. Not 100%, but, you know, 80%. With the injury, I have him on the team, but it's conditional upon him playing at the same level throughout the beginning of the season, because I'm just not sure. Because he's not a great offensive player. I mean, he makes a nice first pass. He can do little things like that. But he's not going to quarterback your power play, which I think is overrated in the sense that all these guys we're mentioning can all quarterback the power play. So I don't really worry about that. But he still has to be able to defend well enough to lock down that side.
I think the only, and he's a left shooting defenseman,
yes, which they need.
Which they need. So that's
they have no left shooting defense. I mean, this team is rich in right handed guys. They don't have left handed guys.
Right. And so I you're 100% right, Richard. It's only a question of whether he's at 100%. If he's the Mark Stahl that he can be, then in my mind he's on this team. If he's not 100%, if his eye is causing him issues, then you obviously can't play him on this on a stage like that.
I have Duncan Keith and Drew Doughty as my top pairing. They were terrific in the Olympics. I thought that was really a coming out party, especially for Drew Doughty. Duncan Keith's a tremendous defenseman. They can both move the puck. They can both skate. I take both of them in a heartbeat. You could argue that both of them are the two best defensemen in the National Hockey League. That's how good they are. Shea Weber is obviously in that conversation as well. He'd be my second pairing guy on the right side. You could argue he's better than Doughty, but he'd be my second pairing guy on the right side. I would have Mark Stahl with him. Because I believe Mark Stahl can be a lockdown guy if healthy. My third pairing would be Alex Pietrangelo with Jay Boumeister. And Pietrangelo, I think, is terrific. I think he's a great skater. He moves the puck. He can do a lot of things. Ken Hitchcock trusts him. I like him. He can play power play. He can skate on the big ice. And if you look at the players we're talking about right now, all these players can skate. I don't know if anybody there is going to be considered even close to an average skater. I think they're all above average skaters. Jay Boumeister makes the team. He can log a lot of minutes. He can skate on the big ice. He can do that, make the simple play. And I think his chemistry with Pietrangelo is really what's most important, because the left side is weak. And I don't want to throw Chris Letang out on the left side beside Pietrangelo. He's a young defenseman. He doesn't need to have an erratic guy on the left side. He needs a steadying force who he's comfortable with, who can cover a lot of ground and make him feel like he can do whatever he wants. He can take the puck offensively. That's why I have him. My extra defenseman, I have PK Subban, because Subban is a dynamic player. He can move the puck. He can skate. He's got a great shot. He's got a good personality, and I think it'll be reined in. You know, there are people who have issues with his personality, but I think it'll be reined in under the leadership of that group, because there's so many guys in there who are accomplished. Then you get to that eighth guy, and I go back and forth here. I mean, I don't think Letang, I just don't trust Letang in a big moment right now. I don't think they need his offense. He's an offensive defenseman, but they don't need his offense. Doughty can perform offensively. So can Weber. So can Keith. So can Subban. I don't think you need it. I think you need another left-handed kind of lockdown guy. And I think I'd probably add Dan Hamhuis to the page there. Because he can just be solid. He can skate well. He can move the puck. Unassuming. And he can jump into the slot that Stahl or Boumeister, if they struggle, can take. So that's my D. Now, before we go to break, guys, I pose this question to you in the show plan. Is there one defenseman that wasn't on the orientation invite list that you think, hey, this guy may come out of nowhere and crack this squad? And Remus, I want to get you in on that too. Is there a defenseman who wasn't invited to the camp, and there's a lot of defensemen invited to the camp, but you think, hey, you know what? If he has a great season, he may be in consideration. Is he?
I don't necessarily know. The one guy that was at the orientation camp that I think maybe is a future defenseman is Travis Hamonic. I don't think he's going to make it. But I think for the most part, I thought that every defenseman that I thought had a good chance of making it the team, but there are other defensemen out there for sure.
David?
No, you know what? I really don't. I think that these are we've talked about the guys who are going to be on the team, and barring something completely unforeseen like an injury.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, like, even if there's an injury, we've covered the guys who will be on the team.
Remo?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Dave here.
All right, just hold on a second. Okay, so
what do you want me to go?
So halfway through the first hour of the show, I asked for one guy on hold on.
Mark Edward Vlasic?
He was invited.
See, I
asked for one guy who wasn't invited. You guys got nothing.
I'm going to pass on that one.
All right, well, I'm going to toss out my answer to the question.
Cam Fowler? No, he's American.
He's American. Mm-hmm. Michael Delzotto. Do I think he'll make the team? No, but I think he plays the left side. He's a great skater. He can move the puck. He can play power play. If he really forms a nice defensive game, and maybe under the tutelage of Alain Vigneault. Now, he was trusted by John Tortorella, but under the tutelage of Alain Vigneault, maybe he can mature a little bit more. Maybe he can get into that picture, because that left side, if a defenseman on the left side has an amazing first half of the season, I think he can get in there. And you never know what happens, right? Remus, do you want to give us your D before we go to break?
No.
Okay, because you're gonna whine about it after the break. So I figured I'd throw it to you before the break.
Maybe. I'll just...
You think about it?
I'll whine after the break.
Of course. And if we want to get your take on the defense, tweet us at Illegal Curve, and Michael Bryan, Remus, will read it. We'll read out your tweets when we come back. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, David Manuka of IllegalCurve.com, and DJ Michael Bryan Remus. Remus, this is a song that came out after 1994. What's going on?
Yeah, I don't know. I just spun a wheel and landed on this.
We talked about defensemen. We're talking about the Canadian Olympic team and who our picks would be if the team had to be picked today. In the first segment, we broke down the goaltenders. In the second segment, we broke down the defensemen. 8 defensemen, 3 goaltenders. I think the most interesting debate really lies with the forwards. So over the next 2 segments, we're going to talk about the forwards. We're going to talk about some of the questions we have, some of the issues we have. I have an issue personally with Claude Giroux taking this orientation camp off. We're going to talk about that probably next segment. Dave, I don't want to hear just your naming 14 forwards. I want to hear who your 4 lines are and who your 2 extra guys are.
Okay.
So give it over.
You ready? Okay, I got Sharp, Crosby, Stamkos on line 1.
So that's Patrick Sharp, with Steven Stamkos and Sidney Crosby.
Correct.
All guys who can play center, but you have them all playing Crosby at center.
Yeah.
And the other 2 at wing.
Right.
It seems like, and now let me quickly get in there, it seems like Steven Stamkos is going to be a winger on this team, but he plays predominantly center for Tampa Bay, so I think that's interesting.
Well, you know, I think they said that they have to have guys, obviously, that can play center, but they're comfortable going to the wings. Then on my second line, I had Eric Staal, Jonathan Toews, and Rick Nash.
Okay.
And then... third was Carter, Tavares, and Giroux.
Okay, who do you have where?
I have Carter on the left, I have Tavares at center, and I have Giroux at right.
Yes, yeah, Giroux is a center, and you know Carter usually is a center, natural center who played right wing last year.
Yeah.
But you know, he's a versatile player, and Giroux you're going to have to move over. So you have a lot of centers moving over, which I think most teams do.
Right.
So far, recap your 3 lines again.
So I've got Sharp, Crosby, Stamkos,
okay.
Staal, Toews, and Nash,
okay.
Carter, Tavares, and Giroux.
Okay, who's your 4th line?
4th line is Couture, Bergeron, and Perry.
Okay. And who are your 2 extra guys?
And then I've got, I was going back and forth, but I've got St. Louis and Getzlaff as my 2 extras.
Okay, so why St. Louis and Getzlaff as the extras and not on the actual roster, on the top 4?
You know what, I just wasn't sure. Like, Getzlaff I like, but I'm not sure I like him on the big ice. I'm not 100% convinced. St. Louis I love, but his fitness level is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I could have put St. Louis easily into this roster for someone, but I just like the way I've kind of captured it with a little bit more youth than St. Louis. But I mean, if you threw St. Louis into my lineup, I wouldn't be upset about it.
I guess noticeable omissions, on your team would be Mike Richards.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
You know what? I just felt like his role was filled. You've got Bergeron on the team, so you know, do you really need, especially again, we're not talking in North America, we're not playing on a North American ice surface.
Mm-hmm.
So we're playing on a bigger ice surface where speed is going to be a factor, and I'm not sure that they're going to need a that many guys who bring what Mike Richards brings to the table. So I think in my mind it's less important in overseas than it is in North America, and quite frankly, you know, we can't play a Canadian style game overseas. You know, Canada only, the 2 gold medals we have are in North America. overseas. I think, what, 2 7th-place finishes or something like that for, you know, in Nagano and,
yeah,
and Turin.
You know.
So, I mean, like, I'm just saying you have to change your game to where you're playing. You have to be able to adapt.
Fourth in Nagano. I think it comes down to whether you think that's going to be a checking line, Dave,
right,
or similar to a checking line. When you put Mike Richards or Patrice Bergeron mm-hmm. in the NHL, mm-hmm. that's a first line.
That's
but
right.
In the Olympics, they're serving a checking line. And I do think they're going to have that. You remember Brendan Morrow was on the 2010 team? But, Dave, this is why we're having this debate, because this is an important tournament for Canada. They've already won 2 out of the 4 golds mm-hmm. since the NHLers. So it's not like this is going to make or break Canadian hockey. But
every Olympics makes or breaks Canadian hockey.
They want to win still. I mean, there's still pressure on them to win gold. And when you hear Stevie Y talk about speed, 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 there's obviously other elements to it because it's just general skating and smart players and everything. I do think that there will be a checking line or guys that really on this team are more so grinders or checkers. But I can see what you're saying. I wouldn't be surprised if you have talented players that are more offensive players on the fourth line.
You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We are in the middle of picking our forwards for the 2014 Team Canada roster for the Sochi Olympics, and Ezra Ginsberg is up next.
Well, I don't have Rick Nash on the team right off the bat. That's one guy that people have slotted in as kind of like a second-line right winger. So
why not?
Let's go line by line just like Dave did, and then I'll give you my extra forwards.
Why not? Why no Nash before you start?
Really, basically, it came down to James Neal or Rick Nash, and if you look at how many goals James Neal scored, and I know people are going to say it's who he's playing with, but I think James Neal is, at this point in his career, a better natural goal scorer, and Rick Nash has struggled a little bit. Now, yes, Rick Nash
I don't mind that.
Rick Nash was on a bad team, Richie. He was on a bad team in Columbus.
Rick Nash is hard to play with.
You know I'm a big Rick Nash guy anyways. I like Rick Nash.
Yeah, he's hard to play with.
But I think James Neal has worked his way onto this team. Now, I think he's a long shot, by the way. I think there's a very good chance Rick Nash ends up on this team, but I think that James Neal has entered that conversation and can fill that role.
I would argue looking at that roster that James Neal is the second or third best one-shot goal scorer
yep.
Behind Steve Stamkos. You can maybe argue yep. Jeff Carter's up there too, but James Neal might be the best one-shot goal. And what I mean by that is, you know, Rick Nash needs that puck on his stick to score. James Neal needs a pass to score. He doesn't need the puck on a stick for half an hour.
So I'm going to give you my first few lines here. So I've got a pretty darn good first line. I've got Eric Staal on the left wing, mm-hmm. Sidney Crosby in the middle, and Steven Stamkos on his right side. So that's my top line, my scoring line. And I think that these lines are all moving parts, by the mm-hmm. way. I don't think anything is set in stone. My second line, I've got Johnny Toews in the middle with Ryan Getzlaff on his left and Corey Perry on his right. A little bit different mm-hmm. than what Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry would be doing on Anaheim. Obviously, Getzlaff is a natural center, but I think he'll be on the left. And I think, by the way, there's been lots of talk about who's a lock and who isn't a lock.
Yeah.
For me, Getzlaff and Perry are locks.
Toews is better on the draws than Getzlaff, too.
Yes. Yeah. So that's my second line. And I do, just for argument's sake, I do believe that James Neal, Corey Perry, either two of those guys would be on the wings of the second and third lines.
Okay.
So my third line, I've got John Tavares in the middle with James Neal or Corey Perry on the right, and then I had Giroux on the left side. Now, I know we want to talk about that later. Giroux, I think, just based on how much skill he has and such a smart hockey player, he's injured right now.
And by that, you're referring to the fact that Claude Giroux opted to not go to the Canadian orientation camp to continue his rehab in Philadelphia.
Right, and that was kind of a little bit surprising because these guys weren't on the ice, Dave, and he still didn't show up. And you have to think that doesn't bode well with Team Canada. So Giroux, I wouldn't even say Giroux was a lock.
A lot of people thought Giroux
was a lock. So I've got Giroux there on the left side. And then this is my fourth line where I put out my roster after Gary Lawless put out his roster on illegalcurve.com. I put out Ginsberg's picks.
Rinos can tweet it out on Legal Curve.
And this is one of the ones that caused the most controversy. I think Brad Marchand is on this team. And the reason why I think Brad Marchand is on the right wing in the fourth line is because I think he's one of the most difficult players to play against. Mm-hmm. The guy is just an absolute lightning bolt. He goes up and down the ice, and he's a super pest. And he can score goals, too.
And he's good, yeah.
And he's good. So mm-hmm. I have Brad Marchand on the fourth line right wing, and I've got the line as Bergeron in the middle, Marchand on the right, and then St. Louis on the left side. Now, I also think Mike Richards is on my team, but he's an extra forward.
Okay.
And I Dave also mentioned St. Louis is an extra forward. It's amazing to believe, Dave, that the guy who had the most points in the NHL last year would be an extra forward. But yeah. So, I mean, Marty St. Louis, I've still got him on the left side of my fourth line. And I think he could even move up to that left side playing with Tavares and Neal. Because I think Marty St. Louis is a big part of this team. I think he still makes this team, and I still think he plays a crucial role. I by no means think that he's too old or, I mean, the guy, like I just said, I mean, he led the league in scoring. My other extra forward is Joe Thornton. Now, the problem I have with Joe Thornton as an extra forward, I think he's too valuable to not play, and that's kind of my issue. But as far as other guys out there, I kind of looked at Logan Couture. I looked at Jordan Eberle. Mm-hmm. I looked at Taylor Hall. I don't think that they will offer enough playing on a lesser role. I think Joe Thornton could play on that fourth line and kind of play and give veteran leadership. Now, I think there's a good chance that Logan Couture is one of those guys that has emerged kind of on that radar. Like, I think if Giroux doesn't make the team, Couture would take that spot, somebody like that. So that's my team, and I think that, you know, there are a lot of question marks, a lot of moving parts. I don't have Nash. Like I said, no Couture. So those are two guys that are kind of on a lot of people's list that I kind of said, okay, not just yet.
Recap. Well, give us a recap.
Okay, my 14 forwards, Eric Staal, Sidney Crosby, Steven Stamkos on the first line. Then I've got Ryan Getzlaff, Jonathan Toews, Corey Perry on the second line. Third line, Claude Giroux, John Tavares, James Neal. Fourth line, Marty St. Louis, Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand. And then I guess if you want to call them the extras, even though they might not be the extras, Mike Richards, Joe Thornton.
That's an interesting team. I'm going to give you my team after the break, and we're going to talk about maybe one player who wasn't invited to the orientation camp who we think can make this team with a good first part of the season. And we're going to talk about Claude Giroux and his non-attendance at the orientation camp in Calgary. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
All right, Remus, I'll give you a thumbs up for some good tunes there. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, David Manuk of LegalCurve.com, and Michael Remus. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are on our summer hours, 10 to 12, replay from 12 to 2. Last summer show, back to 12 to 3, our regular time slot, next weekend, next Saturday at noon. We are excited for the NHL season to get underway. We can't wait, actually. We'll talk Jets in the second hour of the show, but in the final segment of the first hour of the show, we've been talking about Team Canada, and we've given you our picks for the defensemen on the team, we've given you our picks for the goaltenders on the team, and you've heard from David Manuk and Ezra Ginsberg for their picks for the forwards on the team. I'm now going to give you my picks for the forwards on a line-by-line basis. My first line, Sidney Crosby at center with Eric Staal on the left side and Jeff Carter on the right side. Most people, and I've seen lists that don't have Jeff Carter on the team, and lists that do have Jeff Carter on the team. Jeff Carter can skate, which is important on the big ice. He can play center. He's not bad in the draw either, which is important on the big ice. He's defensively responsible, and he's got a terrific shot, and he's a goal scorer. I think you need to have some snipers on this team. And there's a lot of good players on this team, but Jeff Carter's a goal scorer, and I think you need to have a couple goal scorers on the squad. I like him on this team better than I like Rick Nash. Rick Nash is not on my team. Rick Nash is a good player, but Rick Nash needs a puck on a stick all the time, and I think he makes him more difficult to play with. And especially in a skills competition. And that doesn't mean, like, in terms of the skill level at this event, that doesn't mean he hasn't been good in the past, and doesn't mean he hasn't represented Canada well in the past, and he probably will make the team, but he's just not on my team. My second line, I have Stamkos in the middle with St. Louis on the right. I mean, why break up arguably the best pair in the National Hockey League? And what I do is I take John Tavares, who's a natural center, I put him on the left side of Steven Stamkos and Marty St. Louis. And I do that because I realize that Marty St. Louis likes a puck on a stick, likes the puck on the right half boards, is a creative player. Stamkos doesn't need to have the puck on a stick, he can just score. So I like the fact that Tavares or St. Louis can quarterback the play and can play a little give and go off themselves and then get the puck to Stamkos for the one-timer. My third line is Jonathan Toews with Logan Couture on the left side, a guy who can play left wing and center, and Corey Perry on the right. Toews is arguably the best two-way center in the National Hockey League. He wins draws, he competes, he can kill penalties, he can play the power play. I mean, there's no reason. He's an absolute shoo-in to make the squad. Couture is a really good, dependable two-way player who can score, pass, defend. He can do a lot of things. And then Corey Perry, sometimes he's undisciplined. Sometimes, you know, his foot speed isn't the best. But he can score, he can be a presence in front of the net. And while you are playing over in the Olympic ice, you still do need that kind of player. Maybe not four of those kind of players, but I think you need a couple. My fourth line is Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand on the left, and Patrick Sharp on the right. And you may say, okay, well, you know, you've left some guys off the list. Sure. Patrice Bergeron, two-way player, is, if he's not the best set two-way center in the league, he's second probably to Jonathan Toews. He wins draws. He's a right-handed center. They need that for those big, important draws on the right side of the goaltender in the offensive and defensive zones. Him and Brad Marchand form arguably the best penalty-killing duo in the league, and I think that's important. You want guys who have played together before and who can kill penalties. And Team Canada at times is undisciplined, especially the Olympic referees, not NHL referees, but you're going to get some guys who don't call NHL games. You need to be aware of it. Patrick Sharp on the right side, he can play center, he can play the right side, he can play anywhere, really. He's just a winner. You know, he'll do what he needs to do to win. I think he'll buy into the team concept, and that's why I have him there. Now, my extras, and I think this extra player will eventually get into the lineup, it may be in Sharp's place, is Mike Richards. Mike Richards is on my team. He may not be the best skater, may not have the best shot, may not be the biggest guy, but he wins. Mike Richards wins. He wins little junior championships, he wins Stanley Cups, he wins Olympic gold medals, he wins everything. And this guy, and he'll sacrifice the body, and he's on my team. Whether or not he might look the part doesn't matter to me. He performs when it matters, and he's always a guy, and he's a leader, and he's dependable. He's one of my extras. Now, my other extra, I've gone back and forth on. Because, you know, I mentioned Rick Nash. You know, he's not on my team, but sure, he could be an extra. I think Taylor Hall's game is made for the big ice. I think Taylor Hall can skate like a gazelle. I think the left side does leave some room because you always have centers. I think the left side could give some room to a guy like Taylor Hall to burn the corner, to kind of play a reckless style, play a little bit less minutes, but play hard. And Taylor Hall is my extra. So to recap, I have Crosby, Staal, and Carter in my first line. Stamkos, St. Louis, Tavares is my second line. Couture, Toews, and Perry is my third line. Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, Patrick Sharp is my fourth line. Mike Richards and Taylor Hall is my extras. I don't have Rick Nash. I explained why before.
No Claude Giroux either.
I don't have Claude Giroux. And let me get into that because I want to transition that into the next topic. I like Claude Giroux as a player. I really like him as a player. He can do a lot of things. He can score, he can pass, he can skate, he'll take on Sidney Crosby. Why wasn't he at the orientation camp? I don't know. I mean, I heard rehab. It's 3 days, 4 days. 4 days for a hand injury. He needs to be rehabbing. People, you know, I think people have discounted the orientation camp. Oh, it's this. Or Mike Babcock and Ken Hitchcock, the leadership group that Team Canada has, utilizes their time wisely. They're too smart not to. And if I'm on a team, or I want to make a team, and I'm not a shoo-in like Sidney Crosby, I better damn well be at every camp to find out what systems we're playing, what is expected of me if I want to make the team, how we're going to do this, how we're going to do that. And if I feel like I don't need to go, but the other 40 guys need to go, then I worry about team unity. And I worry, to be honest with you, about the guys who do take their time to go. Why should it make have no bearing on the decision? So I have an issue with him not being there, and that's one of the reasons why I don't have him on the team.
So, like, I mean, similar, you know, unlike Claude Giroux, when you see a player like Carey Price who misses his honeymoon to be at this training camp, which some would, like you said, some have said means really little, but is in reality probably quite significant for everybody to get to know each other, because the truth is, and we heard some of the Jets who went to the U.S. camp talk about this, you know, you don't know these guys sometimes as well as you think you do. Sometimes, I mean, sure, there's a camaraderie with hockey players, but if, you know, you're a Western guy who doesn't go to the East very often, you don't necessarily know these guys. And the truth is, you could be on a line together. So having sort of ability to just spend 3-4 days building chemistry, it's important. Absolutely. I certainly wouldn't say that it's unimportant.
Closure is a center. There's a lot of centers on this team. Can he play the wing? Who would he play with? As you mentioned, a lot of issues there. And, you know, Joe Thornton missed the camp, but Joe Thornton's child was sick. So that's extenuating circumstances. That's different to me than the hand injury. Before we go to break, and I know we're up against it, I want to ask you, as I asked you about the other positions, is there one player who wasn't invited to this camp that you think may make this team with a really good performance in the first half? Izzy Ginsburg.
Yeah, we were struggling to find defensemen, and you know, we should mention also that if we didn't mention it in the second segment, that Delzato is a left-shooting defenseman. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I incorrectly said that, you know, Duncan Keith is a right-shooting defenseman. Mm-hmm. He's a left-shooting defenseman. But right now, the only left-shooting defenseman would be Duncan Keith and Mark Stahl. That's why a lot of people have Bomeister in there, right?
Right, exactly.
So that's why Delzato was a good pick by you. As far as forwards go, I'm going to say Evander Kane. And the reason why I'm not just saying Evander Kane to pander to the Winnipeg Jets fans. I'm saying Evander Kane because he has the ability in him to score 40 goals in a full season in the NHL. And he's entering now a very crucial year for his development. Last year, he was good. It was a short season, though. Didn't have a training camp and all that. So I think Evander Kane, simply because of his skill set and his speed, and you know, everybody knows how good Evander Kane is, and everybody knows he's still growing as a hockey player. He's still in his early 20s. But I think Evander Kane, if he comes out of the right out of the gate and has 15, 20 goals in the first half of the season, I think he's a guy to keep an eye on. I really do. And I think he's the type of guy that, just based on how good of a player he is, how good of a goal scorer he is, he could get on the Team Canada radar.
You know what? It's interesting. I was thinking about Evander Kane, but of course he didn't do particularly well in the KHL. Obviously, bigger ice surfaces mm-hmm. there. So I'm not sure. You know what? It was hard for me. I looked at a guy, honestly, like Jerome McGinley, who's been to 4 of the Olympics. So, I mean, and obviously it wasn't invited now. So that's tough. But I think he's over the hill, and there's too many guys. Like, I mean, I left Mike Richards off. So how could I include Jerome McGinley when I would have Mike Richards over Jerome McGinley, right? So
I think it's 3 Olympics McGinley's been to. 02, when he was arguably the best player.
Right.
And
that's
then
right.
06, and then 2010. The one guy I have is Jamie Benn. He can skate. He's got a really good wrist shot. He can stick handle. He can create for other people, and he can create for himself. And he's going to play with Tyler Seguin on the left side. And the left side's open to me. If there's one spot that maybe somebody can grab, I think it is the left side. When we come back, we're going to shift over, talk about the Winnipeg Jets. And on that note, we're going to talk to you about TSN 1290's Ultimate Winnipeg Jets Game Day Experience 2. You'll hear about that after the break. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Halfway through the final summer show, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on TSN1290, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsburg, David Manouk, and Michael Remus. In the studio, taking you through the rest of the morning, the final morning of August 2013. We mentioned it before we went to break, the Ultimate Winnipeg Jets Game Day Experience 2. You heard about the details of the grand prize during the commercial. This year, it's bigger and better. We're putting you in the heart of the action for an entire day behind the scenes at the November 21st Winnipeg Jets home game versus the reigning 2013 Stanley Cup champion Chicago Blackhawks. It's your ultimate all-access pass and game day experience. We'll qualify 4 listeners daily at 7:15 in the morning, 8:15 in the morning, 12:15 in the afternoon, and 5:15 in the afternoon for a chance to win Jets tickets and so much more. Every qualifier will win a gift card to the Jets Gear Store and Boston Pizza. We'll award a pair of promo tickets to the Jets versus the Kings home opener on October 4th. This Friday morning. The grand prize will be announced on Monday, October 28th. Keep it locked for all the info and complete contest details online at tsn1290.ca. Remus, if they call in at 12:15, they'll be talking to you.
I will be taking the calls at 12:15 on the Rona Rant. I'm looking forward to this contest. It was great last year. Everyone is really excited about it. It's huge. I mean, huge, huge package. It'd be a day that you would never forget for any Winnipeg Jets fan. And then it also includes a trip, I believe.
Speaking of huge and a contest, Dustin Byfuglien's weight has been much talked about this offseason.
A segue?
Yeah. And you know, there was pictures that floated around unsubstantiated as to when they were taken this summer, allegedly. And Dustin Byfuglien, who looked like he was weighing in, it's, you know, it had been reported, Gary wrote about it, Gary Lawless of TSN 1290 in the Free Press, at about 300 pounds last year. And then Gary, I believe, tweeted out this morning that Dustin Byfuglien, according to a source, go ahead, Dave.
I'll read the tweet. It's Gary tweeted, very solid source out of Minnesota. It says, NHL Jets defenseman Dustin Byfuglien is down 30 pounds from year end. Good side for the Jets. And then the other thing he tweeted was, Buff impressed USA Hockey types. He got a chance to make that roster, or he's got a chance, right? His versatility and ability to change a game makes him valuable.
I don't see him making the team because by my math, and I'm not a mathematician, if he was 300 pounds last year and he's lost 30 pounds, he's still 270.
Well, I mean, we don't know that he was 300 pounds. But
well, I mean, we're talking about the reports. This is all alleged, but we're talking about the reports.
Hold on. Are we still talking about reports of Dustin Byfuglien's weight? I mean, it's like, are we talking about Bigfoot here? Like Bigfoot was spotted? Like, first off, Dustin Byfuglien was at the U.S. orientation camp.
Didn't look that skinny to me in the pictures, I'll tell you.
We've seen pictures of him, and we're still talking about, you know, whether he lost 20 pounds or 30 pounds. Like we're going to see him in just over a week at training camp.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to get, like, you know, maybe the media will bring a scale to the first scrum with Dustin Byfuglien. I mean, we're still talking about this. Dustin Bufflin's lost some weight this summer. He knows he was too heavy. I think that's undeniable. I don't think he's gained any weight.
Is that even possible?
I think it's safe to say that he's lost some weight, but we're still talking about this. It's not like he's been hiding in the woods and, you know, he's going to emerge 100 pounds lighter. I mean, he's lost some weight. He's going to be lighter this year. I think he heard the criticism that he was too heavy last year. I don't think that he's oblivious to all of this. And it boggles my mind that we still have to have reports that he's 30 pounds lighter or 15 pounds lighter. I mean, we were hearing this towards the end of last season. And now we've got a week to go before training camp, and we're still talking about how much weight Dustin Byfuglien's lost. I mean, the guy's lost some weight. He did some things with his diet. He, you know, he got on the treadmill. He lost some weight. Like, let's wait till training camp, and then we can maybe do a weigh-in.
Well, I think, you know,
we'll bring in Jordan Cicua.
Yeah,
and we'll do a weigh-in.
No, I think, you know, I think it's interesting. I think that, you know, clearly that was a factor last season. And everybody was talking about it. And then as, you know, players left Winnipeg.
Did you say he's fatter than last season? Or what? A factor than last season?
And I said, and you know, and the truth is, as players left Winnipeg, you know, as the season ended and they went home, and you have Byfuglien go back to Minnesota. And the truth is, we, you know, obviously everybody in Winnipeg is geared towards anything Jets related. I mean, we see that on the website all the time. And the truth is that the reports we got out of Minnesota, you know, whether it be from like from Michael Russo of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, mm-hmm. who tweeted that he's never seen Buff look so fit, and
we talked about it before the show. What does that mean? Michael Russo writes for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. The Jets didn't even play Minnesota last year,
right?
So conceivably, he hasn't seen the guy in 2 years,
right? And but again, he sees him probably in the summer. So, you know, there's that, and then there's his teammates. There, Blake Wheeler said that Jets fans will be pleasantly surprised at the fitness level of Dustin Byfuglien. Now, he did not say anything. Could have just passed on the question. He offered that up. And you have to think that if he's offering that up, there's a reason for it. I that's my feeling. Yeah. Now, I haven't seen Dustin Byfuglien. I haven't seen him since last season ended. So I don't know. I'm sure I'll see him next week or the week after, I should say. So we'll have more of a way of looking at it. But it's the thing that I understand what Ezzie's point is, because it's like, it's insane how much talk there is on the picture and what this picture could represent, and whether it's a side profile shot. This isn't Vanity Fair. We're not like we're not trying to like worry about whether, you know, it's a good side profile or headshot.
Let me ask you this then. Does Dustin Byfuglien's weight impact the Jets season?
I think the fact that I think we would all agree that everything is pointing towards that he's lost weight.
But hold on. The question is,
No, I know. I'm just saying, hold on. I'm you know, I'm just prefacing my statement here. Okay? We'd all agree that. Yes, no.
Yeah. It appears to be the case. Absolutely.
Right. Okay. So it looks like he's lost weight, and I think that'll only help his fitness level, help his skating, help his endurance. And so, yes, I do think that a skinnier Dustin Byfuglien will help the Winnipeg Jets. I think the Jets still are, you know, in a position where their defense needs a lot of work, and, you know, Jacob Trouba's role with this team is still in question. Is he going to start every game? Is he going to sit? You know, is he going to be a third pairing defenseman? Can he be good enough to be a second pairing defenseman? So, but simply put, Richie, Dustin Byfuglien, a thinner Dustin Byfuglien will benefit the Jets.
When I look at the Dustin Byfuglien weight concerns, I mean, I think it's important to talk about it because I think, you know, people don't want to talk about it because we're not really sure. And so, you know what, we can speculate. We can try and qualify our speculation with some comments based on the information that we've been provided by, you know, writers, whether it be Gary Lawless, whether it be Michael Russo, whoever else. His weight, I think, precludes him from being a forward because he just can't get up and down enough. And I think that's fine. This team needs defensemen right now, not forwards, based on the offseason acquisitions of two right-wingers and Michael Frolik and Devin Setoguchi. Last year, right wing was a need. That's why Byfuglien was up there in Montreal, I believe, in the Islanders game as well. It didn't last very long. He couldn't get up and down. If you can't get up and down a forward, that's one thing. If you can't get up and down as a defenseman, it's a different variety, right? You can stay back and you can conserve your energy. Of course, that's why defensemen play more minutes. But his weight, to me, is a huge factor on, and no pun intended there, is a huge factor in the Jets' success, because if he's heavy, he can't log as many big minutes. He tires throughout the game. He's more injury prone. And I would say right now that the Jets' defense lacks depth. And if he can't perform and eat big minutes, then who are those big minutes falling on? Maybe it is Trouba, who seems to be very capable and going to be a good defenseman, but can you put him and elevate him to that role that quickly? So I think it's a significant concern, and I hope he's lost a lot of weight, but he needs to maintain that weight throughout the year as well.
I mean, you made the point. He's getting paid $5 million. This is not something that should be a factor.
The truth is,
you're a professional athlete. There's no excuse for being out of shape. I mean, it's as simple as that. And the truth also is, if he was out of shape, you know, those last couple of seasons and playing at a fairly high level, imagine what a trim, in-shape, fit Dustin Byfuglien could do for this team.
I don't think we have. It seems to be he's probably around the weight, guessing here. They're probably around the weight he was the first season when it began. And he was a good performer. But, I mean, this is a guy also, if you remember in Atlanta, had a great start to a season. And got that big contract from former GM of the Thrashers, Rick Dudley. The beginning of the season, I think the Jets really have to be successful, because if you look at their schedule, there's some games to take there. But I think as you also, you talk about the fact that the weight does, you know, it affects his performance down the stretch.
Right, and he was playing 24, 25 minutes a game, and he was out of shape, and that led to an injury. And the fact that he
a couple
has
times.
Obviously been training harder or training differently. I'm not saying training harder. I mean, I don't know Dustin Byfuglien's training regime, but he has been doing something that's taking weight off, whether that's nutrition or training. And he knows that he had to lose weight, and he's done it. Whether it's 10 pounds, 20 pounds, 30 pounds, it doesn't matter.
It matters.
Well, it matters, but
you know, I hear all about, you know, he's looking great, and I see the picture of him, and I'm just guessing based on the USA picture that he's lost some weight. But it's not like he's going to drop in at 240 and come dominate the league. I think what we're dealing with really is the guy.
He's always
really,
been around 250, right, 260. Yeah so if he can get back, if he can get back to, if he's lost 30 pounds, I guess, yeah, Richie, that's better than losing 10 pounds. But he will be one of the top four defensemen for the Jets, and a thinner Dustin Byfuglien means he's going to play more minutes and be more effective in those minutes.
I want to segue to the next segment. I'm going to preview it now. The Jets' defense, we talked about the top six, top eight guys that they have, and the money that they're making. Dustin Byfuglien being one of those guys who's making an excess of $5 million. It's now going to be three guys on the Jets' defense who make an excess of $5 million. Are they overpaid? What is the league? We wrote about this on illegalcurve.com a couple months ago. What does the league pay average number one defenseman, strictly based on the ice time factor? And how many guys in the Jets exceed that number or below that number? And do they all slot in? And what does the Jets defense need to do this year for the team to be successful? We're going to talk about that after the break. In two segments, we're going to talk to Dan Wood of the Anaheim Ducks Radio Network about the return of Teemu Selanne for one final season. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome, this is a farmhouse. We have cluster flies alas in this time of year.
Quarter after the hour, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, David Manuk, and Michael Remus on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. This segment's brought to you by CGA Association of Manitoba. CGA Association of Manitoba is the largest, fastest-growing, and most diverse accounting body in the province. Did you know that CGAs are among the top 5% of income earners in Canada, with an average yearly salary of $72,000 for new graduates? For more information, contact the CGA Association of Manitoba at cga-manitoba.org or 204-477-1256. That's 204-477-1256. The CGA Association of Manitoba. We see more than numbers. We talked last segment, guys, and Remus, I want you to tweet out the article about the Jets and their... David, you're going to be tweeting it out, the Jets and their the salaries. I did an article on illegalcurve.com a couple months ago, but, you know, it's hard to it's very difficult to compare defensemen across the league, right, you know, in terms of salaries. So I tried to use a more simple form, and it was simply did this. Took the average ice time of every defenseman in the National Hockey League, and then what I did was, you know, I put it by team. So every team has their, you know, 1 through 6 in terms of ice time and their defenseman. And then it's hard to gauge a defenseman by points. It's hard to, you know, because, you know, if he's more offensively inclined, maybe he gives it up on the back end. Same for a defensive defenseman. He doesn't get the offensive points, but he certainly is a big, you know, an important cog in the way a team is run. So ice time, you know, how much a player plays to me was a pretty good indicator of his value to an organization. And so what I did was I took all the players in all 30 teams in terms of their ice time, 1 through 6 on each team, and then I took their salaries. And then I averaged out, you know, what does the top ice time guy on each team make, and what's the average of those players? And then the second guy, the third guy, and the fourth guy, the fifth guy, and the sixth guy. And we used it earlier in the summer to talk about Grant Clitsam and, you know, how he was being paid. But what I was thinking about this week, and I was going back over the article, you know, the Jets have a bunch of high-paid defensemen. And in their first season back in the National Hockey League, the Winnipeg Jets, you know, 2.0 as they're known, the Jets had the highest proportion of cap space allotted to defensemen. So, you know, on a scale. So if the Philadelphia Flyers spent $70 million, they may have spent more money on defensemen, but the Jets, as a percentage of their total cap, spent the most money on defensemen. So he looked at, you know, the Winnipeg Jets today. You know, first off, I thought, you know, are the Jets a defensive team? Do the Jets have a really good defense in the National Hockey League? I have lots of concerns about the Jets' defense. I don't think they're that good. So I said, okay, what about pay structure? And I looked at this, and I said, okay, I'll bring back that chart. The average number one defenseman in the National Hockey League, and this doesn't take into account restricted free agents and unrestricted free agents and all of that. So, you know, there's a certain scale, right? Some will tell you that UFAs who are unrestricted, those guys will get 30 to 40% boost in their pay. In any event, took the salary numbers. The first defenseman in the National Hockey League average was a $4.55 million cap hit. Okay? So I thought, okay. The next question I thought was, do the Jets have a number one defenseman on the roster? If you were building an NHL team, do the Jets have a number one defenseman on the roster? So I want to discuss that before I get to the next point. Ezra.
Well, if we're talking about a, and I think we are here, Richie, we're talking about a bona fide number one defenseman, shutdown defenseman, offensive defenseman, someone that can play 30 minutes, mm-hmm. and that you build your decor around. And right now, I think the closest thing that we have to that is Zach Bogosian. And right now, he's playing more of a second pairing role. We have Buff and Toby Enstrom playing as the top pairing, and that changes sometimes. But I think as far as Dustin Byfuglien and Tobias Enstrom goes, there are a lot of concerns there with their ability to defend. Tobias Enstrom, mm-hmm. at the beginning of last season, was one of the highest scoring defensemen. He was leading the defensemen in scoring at one point. And he is an extremely talented puck-moving defenseman, but he's smaller, and he has trouble with bigger forwards, and that's a concern for mm-hmm. me. And he's under contract for another 5 years at quite a bit of money. He's one of the highest-paid guys on the Jets.
$5.75 million per year.
I like Tobias Enstrom, but I think he does have deficiencies. So Zach Bogosian, to me, is the complete package. And I think that he's only scratched the surface of how good he can be. And he was injured last year at the beginning, and then he was injured towards the end there when he had the concussion. And I think this year, for me, with a full season under his belt, he's really going to be able to show everybody what he's all about. Even though he was very good in the Jets' first season, but he was still very young, first year of his bridge contract. So he's still very young, and I think he hasn't fully matured as a defenseman. That's not a bad thing. I'm not knocking him. I'm just saying that I think the best is yet to come for him, and that's probably why he was signed to the 7-year deal by Chevy. So I think that to answer your question, I don't know if they have a number one defenseman in the sense that you know, he's a top 10 defenseman in the NHL or top 15 defenseman.
This would be a top 30.
I think he's the closest. I think he's on the cusp of that.
So this would be a top 30, right? There's 30 teams.
Right, and I don't like to always throw out those numbers. I mean, I think it's tough to say, you know, if it's 30 or whatever, but I think that I'll leave it at that. I think he's on his way to becoming the number one defenseman, and he's the closest thing we have to a number one defenseman.
So I would agree with you on that front. And before I get to Dave here, when you look at it, okay, it's a $4.55 million cap hit average across, you know, if you take 30 number one defensemen. And I think my definition of number one, probably similar to you, as he is, you know, like a Shea Weber type, or those guys don't come around all the time. But there are guys who are going to be on that list you think, oh, maybe they aren't number one defensemen. The question I have is, if the Jets don't have a really number one, or maybe they have one number one, why are they paying three guys over $4.55 million?
We got to mention, too, that you already did mention this, Richie, but Byfuglien is not Cheveldayoff's contract. Yeah, but the fact of the matter is he's still getting paid that money.
Exactly. So you have Enstrom at 5.75 next year, Byfuglien at 5.2 next year, and then Zach Bogosian at 5.142 next year. So you have three guys on the roster who are getting paid more than the average number one defenseman gets paid in the National Hockey League. Three. And you could argue that you don't have any number one defenseman. That concerns me.
Well, with good reason. I mean, you're right. Collectively, that's over $15 million in contracts. And even if you said, are those guys three number ones, you're showing that the average, of course, if you had a number one, he would be at the high level of that. He'd be the high point of that average, right? Mm-hmm. So if you had a bona fide number one defenseman, a Drew Doughty, he's not making $4.55 million on your team. Yeah. So granted, one of those three guys would be entitled to make the $5.7 million if you felt that he was your number one defenseman on a team, you know, or top number one defenseman in the league. So, you know, top 30 of the league. I would say probably based on potential, as he nailed it. I mean, it's Zach Bogosian. There's no question about it. I mean, he's got the defensive skills. He's got the speed. He's got the potential offensive ability. My concern, of course, is his ability to hit the net. I think if he gets his shot, if he starts having more control with a shot, the guy is going to be just deadly, because I think his shot is phenomenal. I just think he misses the net too often. But personally, I think he's got all the tools. He's got the steady leadership of Charlie Huddy, who was one of the best in the business, you know, in the 80s for the Oilers. So I think that, you know, really, if we're talking about the guy who potentially could be a number one defenseman on this team, it's no question, it's Zach Bogosian.
And you look at the Chicago Blackhawks, a division rival, for example. They have two players who make over that average, and that's Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook. I think that people would agree those guys would be number one defensemen, top 30 in the National Hockey League. Duncan Keith's on a long-term deal making $5.5 million per year. Brent Seabrook's got three more years at 5.8, and the next highest defenseman on the roster is Nicholas Chalmerson at 3.5. So, I mean, you look through the division, and I think that gives you a little bit of concern, does it not, in terms of the way the value is structured as opposed to the Jets?
Right, and the St. Louis Blues, right, they have Petrangelo, they have Kevin Shattenkirk, they have Jay Bouwmeester, they have Roman Polak, they have a lot of good defensemen. And you go to Minnesota with Ryan Suter, Jonas Brodin, and there's some issues there in the bottom pairings, but the Winnipeg Jets, their ultimate success this year is going to have a lot to do with replacing Ron Hainsey's minutes, and that is going to be a combination of Grant Clitsam. It's possible Jacob Trouba eats up those minutes. To me, the defense is the big question mark. I really like what the Jets did in the offseason, and I know some people aren't as optimistic. I mean, we're going to do our full Jets preview coming up. I think the Jets will make the playoffs this year, and a lot of people don't have them making the playoffs. And I think let's put it this way. They were bottom third team in the league in goals against last year. Andre Pavlik played a lot last year in the shortened season. Mm-hmm. We talked about that. I think he played way too much. But they have to do a better job of keeping the puck out of their own net.
What have they done to change that?
They're not going to get any better.
They haven't done anything to change that, though.
Really, the big deletion was Hainsey. They brought in Adam Partey, who's going to be an extra defenseman. Adam Partey's not going to be Adam Party's not going to be a regular in the Jets lineup. I think we'd all agree with that.
Can I go on a bit of a rant here, Ezzie, quickly before you finish? And that's, you know, people talking about, oh, the value of Andropov, the value of Wellwood, the value of Hainsey, blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah.
Well, why weren't they signed by any other NHL
team?
Yeah,
let me tell you. I know you're smarter than all the 30 other GMs in the league because the 30 GMs are all stupid, right, apparently. None of these guys are even getting contracts, okay? I mean, let's get serious here, at least on the terms that they're even asking for. So the value of these guys was that they were overpaid or fairly useless on the roster, and now they're off, and so the Jets are going to get better just because they don't have those guys around.
You're not wrong. I mean, the truth is, the proof is in the pudding, or in the signed contract in this case, and the fact of the matter is that these guys don't have contracts. And they're, you know, like, what did we hear? We heard, oh, there's going to be a huge clamoring for Ron Hainsey's services. Has there been? I mean, I'm unaware. There was an article today on the LeoCurve.com, which talked about how, you know, he's a serviceable defenseman, but, you know, he's not going to be making that kind of money, and he's going to have to take a significant pay cut or go overseas if he wants to. If he wants to make big coin, he has to go overseas.
As for the Jets defense, we're going to quickly go to break because we have Dan Wood of the Anaheim Ducks Radio Network on after the break. But I guess to kind of sum up this segment, are the Jets a great defensive team? No. In my opinion. Do they pay their defensemen a lot of money? Yes. So they have to bridge that. There's that disconnect there, and they have to bridge that. Otherwise, I have concerns. You know, because these guys aren't under contract for 1-2 years. You know, Bufflin 3, the rest of them are long-term guys. And Klitsam 3, I mean, the core is here. Trouba might be great when we've heard only great things. But if there's not an internal improvement, what will there be? I think that's a question moving forward to take into consideration. After the break, Dan Wood of the Anaheim Ducks Radio Network to talk about Teemu Selänne's return for his final season in the NHL. Ducks are here October 6th, and you can hear that game on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hi, Bob. It's Teemu.
Yeah, I'm coming back. Yeah, but this is it. This is my final one.
You hear Teemu Selänne right there telling everyone in a YouTube video that he's coming back to the Anaheim Ducks for one final season. This will be his last in the National Hockey League. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, David Minuk, and Michael Remus on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, TSN 1290. Half an hour to go. We've had some great guests on the show over the years, but one of our favorites is Dan Wood of the Anaheim Ducks, and we have him on the line. Remus, you missed the cue for the hotline. No, we're having a good show,
yeah.
Ready to go. And then we're at the hotline ready. He's got his GNR in the background. And, of course, throw it to him, and Remus is looking at me with a puzzled look. Dan, you have you on the line there?
I am here. Thanks, guys.
How's your summer been, Dan?
It's been good. No complaints here. How about you guys?
It's been great. We've had a great summer so far. And I know Jets fans, you're probably not surprised by this, Jets fans have kept a watchful eye on the Anaheim Ducks because October 6th, the Ducks are in town, and Jets fans want to know if they get one last chance to see Teemu Selänne. So obviously the news has been good on that front. And I wanted to ask you, Dan, to start off. You know, at the end of the day, were you surprised that Teemu Selänne chose to return for a final season?
Not really, because I'm one who believes that until something changes, you have to go with what is. For example, until someone beats an SEC team in a national championship game, I have to pick that team to win because history says that's what's going to happen. And obviously, Teemu has flirted with retirement every year since the Ducks won the Cup in 07, but he's always come back. Mm-hmm. And I expected that again. I wasn't sure, but I certainly thought we would see Teemu again. The only thing that surprises me is that, you know, he has said now that this will be his last year. He's always in the past just gone year to year and evaluated it after he was done. But, you know, maybe it is, or who knows? He could change his mind.
Dan, this is a two-part question for you. Why was Ducks head coach Bruce Boudreau so important in convincing Teemu Selänne to come back for one more season? And do you believe that he's still going to play a role of second-line right wing, or where do you think he's going to fit into the Ducks roster this year?
Well, I think that is a good question because last year, quite honestly, with the compacted schedule because of the lockout, it was tough on all the players, and certainly Teemu being the oldest player in the league, it was really tough on him. And I think there were times last season when Bruce Boudreau probably thought it would be best to give Teemu Selänne a game off, and Teemu being the proud athlete that he is, you know, he was not on board with that at that time. And I think that was something they needed to discuss because going forward, the schedule isn't going to be easy this year. Obviously, it's 82 games again. The Olympics are thrown in, so it's going to be quite a challenge. And I think there needed to be an understanding that Temu wasn't going to play all 82 games, which he did 2 years ago, and I know he was really proud of that. I think, and this is just me talking, I haven't talked to Bruce about it, but I think if Temu were to play maybe 70 games, something along that line, take some of the back-to-back games off and be a little more fresh, I think that would be good for everyone concerned. And it'll be interesting to see how he slots into the lineup, because the Ducks do have some young wingers that might be ready for that second-line role, guys like Kyle Palmieri and Emerson Edom. So you might see a little bit of a rotation at times, you know, if Temu's not in the lineup, one of those other guys comes up. But I know Temu still believes that he's capable of playing a real big role, an offensive role, and, you know, that would be what I anticipate.
So, Dan, we spent a significant portion of today's show talking about the Olympics, and what we were curious about with Timu's case is how big of an impact did that have on his decision?
All I can tell you is what he said, and he said it was very important to him, the opportunity to perhaps play in a sixth Olympic Games. He's already the all-time leading scorer in Olympic competition, and I'm sure he wouldn't mind adding a few more points to that total. Temu, you know, his play with Finland's international teams over the years has been real important to him. He's had a lot of success. He's still looking for that first gold medal, and I'm sure the motivation is pretty significant there.
He's been great. I remember in 2002 when he put Chris Pronger, almost put him through the backboards, if you guys recall that. We're joined by Dan Wood of the Anaheim Ducks Radio Network. They broadcast on AM 830 KLAA. Dan, of course, wrote for the Orange County Register prior to making the move to the broadcast booth. And Dan, we mentioned Teemu Selänne in terms of, you know, what role he will play. If he plays the kind of role that you expect, what should fans expect in terms of output and points-wise from Teemu this season?
Well, let me go back real quick to your reference to the Chris Pronger competition in the Olympics in 02. That really amazed me because Temu did not back down from Chris Pronger at all. And I was really impressed by that. It showed a different side of Temu Selänne. And I know Shane Doan talked one time about how you don't want to make Temu Selänne mad because you see a side of him that maybe we don't ordinarily, but that was really impressive. As far as production, you know, it's hard to say. Temu's 25 goals away from 700. I mean, I think all of us would love to see him get there. Is that a bit too much to ask at his age? Probably. But who knows? Temu's capable of scoring goals in bunches. He's done it many times over his career. You know, I'd love to see Temu get 20 goals, 50 points. I think if they could get that out of him over the course of, as I suggested earlier, maybe 70 games, you know, that would be wonderful for a man his age.
Dan, everybody remembers the Ducks game in Winnipeg a couple of years back when the fans were booing everybody who touched the puck except for Temu, just to show how much Temu is loved in this city. What was your experience, you know, working for the Ducks Radio Network for that game?
Really, I think it was one of the all-time memorable experiences for me. And I've covered the Ducks in one fashion or another since 2000, and certainly there are several things that stand out. But that was one of them. And it started before the game. I mean, I remember the team bus pulled up to the hotel well after midnight. I think it was like 2 in the morning because the Ducks had played in Chicago the night before. And there was a huge crowd of fans waiting to greet Temu. And as he is famous for, I mean, he stood outside in the wee hours of the morning and signed autographs for pretty much everyone there. And fortunately, it wasn't one of the coldest Winnipeg nights on record, but it wasn't exactly warm either. And Temu, just being who he is, I mean, the love affair goes both ways between Temu Selänne and the fans. And he certainly remembers the support that he got in Winnipeg when he began his NHL career. That's really important to him. And you can talk about why did he come back, you know, the Olympics, the Ducks are going to play a game against the Kings at Dodger Stadium. But I'm sure the opportunity to go back and play one more game in Winnipeg was, you know, real big for Temu.
So, Dan, speaking of that game you guys are going to be here for in October, what do you expect from the atmosphere? Do you think you'll have a similar one to the one 2 years ago?
Well, you guys know Winnipeg fans better than I do, but I think realizing that this will be their last opportunity to see Teemu Selanne, barring a playoff matchup, which I guess is always a possibility. But, you know, they're going to treat it like a farewell to Teemu, which they probably thought it was 2 years ago, but now they're going to get one more shot. And I think the Ducks fans are going to do that over the course of, you know, the home schedule here. But obviously in Winnipeg, it will just be a one-shot deal. So I have to think that will be a really special night, both for the fans and for Teemu.
I bet you all four of us in this room probably grew up in one, and all have a Teemu Selanne jersey, whether it be the number 13, Dan, or the number 8. We all have that jersey and grew up on him, and he's one of the classiest players of all time. And we want to quickly transition, and we're joined by Dan Wood of the Anaheim Ducks, broadcast their games on AM 830 KLAA, doing the color commentary for those broadcasts. Quickly, to a couple questions about the Ducks that aren't involving Teemu Selanne. They did make a huge trade, you know, on free agent day this year, moving Bobby Ryan to the Ottawa Senators for a package involving Jacob Söderberg and a couple other players and draft picks and such. Was that trade surprising to you, Dan? And why do you think the Ducks finally cut the cord with Bobby Ryan?
I think there are a couple of reasons. You know, Bobby is a tremendously talented hockey player, and he's a tremendous young man as well. I really like Bobby Ryan a lot, and I think he's going to flourish in Ottawa. From a Ducks standpoint, though, I think there was a little bit of impatience with Bobby because he's a proven 30-goal scorer, but there's always been that sense that he was capable of more. Having said that, I don't hold Bobby Ryan personally responsible for the fact that he hasn't risen above those numbers simply because he's never had a clearly defined place in the Ducks lineup. From the time he came up as a rookie and the Ducks were battling some salary cap issues, you know, he was sent back down to the minor leagues when really he deserved to be here, and that strictly had to do with the cap. And, you know, the Ducks have always been a Ryan Getzlaff, Corey Perry-focused team up front since those guys broke in, and Bobby's been kind of the odd man out. At times he's played on their line, at times he's played on the second line with an array of line mates. He's even been moved to center. And he just never really had the right spot consistently here. And with, again, some money issues after the big contracts that the Ducks gave to Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry, you know, I think it was just time for everyone concerned. I think Bobby will benefit from a fresh start. I think the Ducks got a real nice package in return, and Jacob Söderberg should help immediately. So it's tough to lose a guy like Bobby Ryan, but I think it was the right thing to do for the Ducks at this time.
Dan, as you know, Sheldon Souare played a huge role for the Ducks last year, and we were calling it a bounce-back year for him after going down to the AHL. We know now that he's going to miss a significant amount of time with an injury. How are the Ducks going to replace Souare?
It's not going to be easy because Sheldon Souare played really well last season, especially early on, and teamed with Francois Beauchemin to form the Ducks' top D tandem, and no one really knew what that was going to be at the outset of last season, but those two veteran guys just really clicked and were great for the Ducks most of the year. The Ducks have a lot of depth on defense, but they don't necessarily have, you know, the Scott Niedermeyer and Chris Pronger like they had a few years back. Francois Beauchemin finished fairly high in the Norris Trophy voting last season, had a great year, but he's coming off a significant surgery this year too, so he might not be 100% at the beginning of the season. And the Ducks are going to have to rely on some younger players. And when I say younger players, they're looking to Cam Fowler and Lucas Pisa, both of those guys, to take a big step. And they've been waiting for that, and hopefully this is the year. And then some even younger players, Hampus Lindholm, who was a first-round pick a couple of years ago, I think he's probably going to be ready or at least get a shot at playing early on. And Sami Vatanen, who played some here last year, has a great shot, a very offensive-oriented defenseman, small guy, but tremendous talent. So as always happens when someone goes out of the lineup, it needs to be a collective effort to make up for the absence, and that's what the Ducks are going to be looking for.
So then, Dan, what would you say the expectations would be for the Anaheim Ducks this season?
Well, coming off a division championship and a first-round playoff loss, certainly they're going to look to improve on that. The Ducks have a really difficult schedule early. They play a lot of road games, and we talked about the absence of Souare. the question mark around Francois Beauchemin at the beginning of the season. It's going to be difficult for the Ducks to duplicate their blazing start out of the gate last season, although Bruce Boudreau is famous for his team starting well. If the Ducks can just survive the early schedule with a lot of road games, I think they're going to be fine. Another division championship, I don't know if that matters as much as going deeper into the playoffs. That's the goal. They were disappointed with a first-round exit, and I think the idea is going to be to improve on that.
Dan Wood of the Anaheim Ducks. Dan, always a pleasure to have you on. We look forward to seeing you October 6th in Winnipeg, 7 o'clock start time for Timo Solani's final game against the Winnipeg Jets.
I can't wait, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot, Dan.
Thank you. After the break, news and notes, we're going to talk about Peter Chiarelli. We're going to talk about Ryan Miller rumors. We're going to wrap it up. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Richard Pollack, Ezra Ginsberg, David Minuk, and Michael the Station Remus taking you home till noon. And then, of course, there'll be a replay from noon until 2 o'clock. Summer hours are over. Next week, 12 to 3. Illegal Curve back at a regular time slot. Always will be 12 to 3 on Saturdays. And our Wednesday show will be returning soon as well. Wednesdays after H&L from 6 until 8. That's around the NHL. We are looking forward to NHL midweek, excuse me. We are looking forward to that very much. And I know Ezzy's getting primed for another big season. And, you know, we got Bruce in the background. We have a new little segment we're going to introduce this week. It's going to be called Escapades. Ezzy. Oh, there we go. Ezzy, what? We had a good time out. We saw my brother's band, the Patty Kicks, this Thursday. And Ezzy and friends were having a great time. And Ezzy, why don't you share some stories from that evening?
Well, first of all, I'm very excited about this new show. I mean, segment, sorry. Yes, as you said, on Thursday, we were at the Park Theater watching the Patty Cakes, your brother's band, Adam Plain, Adam Pollock, and Andrew McKinnon, our good friends. And, you know, the drinks were flowing. We were having some drinks. The Patty Cakes played for a couple of hours. And I was with you guys. With Dave. Dave's like my chaperone. Like, when I go out drinking, Dave just, like, is responsible for me, so.
It's a hell of a job.
We stayed there.
I have a power of attorney on Ezzy, actually.
We had a few, as I said, we had some adult beverages.
I want to get to the point where, at the end of the night.
Okay, you want to skip, you want to yada yada.
I want to yada yada yada. I want to get to the point where you told me you were making some, you got home late at night. We're not going to talk about what time.
I know you want to get, yeah.
What were you making and how did you make it?
So basically, what the story is I got home pretty late at night that night, and I don't have a lot of food. If anybody follows me on Twitter, I had a bit of an incident with a poisonous apple.
At ICSEG.
Pretty much, my house right now is just beer, water, and chips. And I don't have a lot of food. And something that I happen to have handy, you know, everyone has a freezer with, you know, food. And it's a lot of that stuff I haven't eaten in a while. So I really didn't have any food to eat, and I needed to eat something. So I basically put some frozen pierogies and a frozen hamburger. You know, on the element.
What do you mean on, like, directly on the element or in a bowl?
No, in like a pan.
But, like, wouldn't pierogies, do you boil
like
pierogies?
Like a frying pan.
You can fry pierogies.
Okay, so you fried pierogies, you fried a burger?
I fried a burger with some pierogies, and it was actually very tasty. You know, there's a little sour cream. And that was the end of an amazing night.
Well, I actually thought, because, you know, earlier, we'll get to news and notes in a second, Remus, we can get that ready to queue up. Interesting, Ezzy, because you and I had one of our best talks in a long time on Thursday night, and then you texted me the next morning and didn't remember ever being at my place.
I did not remember ever being at your place, and Dave also drove me to a convenience store that night. It was,
incident.
It was quite the night. It was a fun night.
Next installment of Escapades, we'll talk about Ezzy's eating a poisonous apple that he purchased from a local convenience store and why you never should be purchasing apples from a local convenience store.
NHL news and notes.
couple stories came across the wire this week, I guess, as they say, guys. First of which is a rumor that Josh Rimmer, I believe, son of Jeff Rimmer, formerly of the Florida Panthers, and a TV broadcast now of the Columbus Blue Jackets, was talking about the possibility of a Ryan Miller trade. And specifically, of course, this is a rumor, and Darren Dreger said he hasn't heard the same things, but Ryan Miller being traded from Buffalo to Colorado for Paul Stastny. Both players are coming into their final years before they become unrestricted free agents, of course, meaning that anybody can have a bid on them as of July 1st next year. I mean, thinking about this, to me, and Buffalo needs help up the middle. We've talked about that. Colorado arguably needs a goaltender. Like the Varlamov move by Greg Sherman for a first rounder was probably a bust. I think almost assuredly a bust. The move may very well not happen, but it also seems to kind of make a lot of sense. Is it one of these things that makes too much sense?
Yeah, well, I mean, if it doesn't, it probably won't happen. You're right. But you know what? It's interesting. I mean, it's clear that Miller needs a change of scenery.
Yep.
He needs to get out of Buffalo. I mean, you know, I like
who doesn't need to get out of Buffalo.
people say that about Winnipeg. That's why we're not going to knock Buffalo here in Winnipeg, right, Es?
But the point, absolutely not. I love Buffalo.
But
Buffalo wings.
That's true. You love Buffalo Wild Wings, actually, Es, not the city of Buffalo.
That's true.
But anyways, the point is that you know, a guy like Ryan Miller is a cerebral guy. Needs to change the scenery. He just has to switch. Some, because it's just not working. And Buffalo, despite all the projections to be a Stanley Cup contender a couple of years ago after they made all that big splash in free agency, are clearly not contending for the Stanley Cup this year.
Dave, this is the big thing here. Both of those guys are going to be UFAs next summer. That's why this whole thing is coming up. A lot of people don't think Ryan Miller is going to re-sign in Buffalo. And they're probably going through the thought process, should we trade him now, get max value? If they could swing a deal straight up, for Paul Stastny, I think you do that in a second.
Well, I think what it does is allows you to put, you know, Stastny's not the best skater, not a goal scorer, but he's a very good hockey sense, good passer. He's regressed over the past couple of years, but I mean, you know what? You're going to probably lose Miller, and you need forwards, and
right.
You need centers, and you can ideally slot Stastny either in front of or behind Cody Hodgson and improve your middle. I mean, and they both make a lot of money.
Right.
It seems to make a lot of sense.
And if Darcy Regier thinks that he can go with a tandem of Jonas Enroth and Matt Hackett, then I guess he'll make that decision. I think you also have to consider Buffalo is a long shot to make the playoffs this year.
They are.
They're not a good team. Their defense has question marks. They brought in Henrik Tallander, who used to play with Tyler Myers. So, you know, that's one of the minor moves they made. But, you know, you're going into a season with essentially the same forward group. Mikhail Gregorenko is a guy that started the season in Buffalo. Then they sent him back to the QMJHL. So this is a team that's probably on, I would say, the growth curve. They're a team that's rebuilding and is, like I said, probably not a playoff team this year. You never know what can happen. But especially if Ryan Miller's not coming back, and he's a guy that we didn't get into this, but I think he does make Team USA. I don't think he's the starter. I think the way he played in 2010, people are talking about Ryan Miller not making this team. I realize Craig Anderson's good. But I do think I do think it'll be Quick, Schneider, and Miller.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that.
But I think that trade makes sense, Richie. You know, Colorado is very deep at center. They have a lot of good players, young players coming in. So, you know, that trade rumor, I think, does have legs.
I mean, the Avs could go DeShane, MacKinnon, O'Reilly up the top three spots. And I think MacKinnon could probably already play second line center. DeShane can play first line center. O'Reilly can certainly play third line center, if not second. So I think there it makes a lot of sense both ways. But again, when it makes too much sense, as Dave mentioned, probably doesn't happen. Last point of news and notes I want to talk about. Peter Chiarelli, who's part of the Canadian Brain Trust for the 2014 Sochi Olympics and, of course, has had a Stanley Cup victory and came to the close to having a second Stanley Cup victory this offseason and helped build the Ottawa teams in the early 2000s. Resigns for 4 years with the Boston Bruins. You know, I mean, it's a no-brainer to sign him. It's a no-brainer to sign Peter Chiarelli. I mean, my question is Peter Chiarelli a top three GM in the NHL?
Yes.
I agree.
And I think the proof is in the fact that he's part of that management group with Team Canada. He's there with Stevie Y. He's
Kenny
there
Holland.
With Kevin Lowe. He's there with Ken Holland. And Chiarelli, you know, got his start in Ottawa, as you mentioned, and was the assistant GM there for a couple years. And now you look at what he's done just as far as the draft picks that they've made and how he's kept them and how with Nathan Horton he was asking for too much money and he wouldn't sign him. And then the moves that he's made. And this is a team that is one of the most successful teams of the last 10 years, especially of the last 3 or 4 years. And they're going to be good again next year. They're going to be a contender in the Eastern Conference. They've brought Jerome Iginla. Anybody that can almost sign Jerome Iginla and then he decides he still wants to play for your team shows you a lot about Jerome McGinley's thoughts and how he thinks this team could win the Stanley Cup again. I think they're a team that's solid at every single position.
I love the way he's built the team, and he's really put his fingerprints all over that squad, and I think he's one of the best GMs in the NHL.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
And Michael, Brian Remus tells you to hurry up, you hurry up. David Minuk.
I'll be quick then. My cheer goes to Timu Solani returning for his 21st season. I'm very excited to see him back, and especially excited to see the Jets fans' reaction to his return.
We all better be cheering Timu Solani. He's coming back for one more year. It's not just good for Anaheim. It's not just good for Winnipeg. It's good for the sport of hockey because this guy is a surefire Hall of Famer, and that game in Winnipeg will be guaranteed classic.
Obviously, he gets my cheers. Well, my other cheer goes to Mike Babcock for being creative and having the ball hockey, trying to teach the players how to do a walkthrough. Everybody, it was the easy joke this week. Everybody was using the same joke about the ball hockey. I actually thought it was really creative. I liked it. I thought it's good use of time. Mike Babcock is one of the best coaches in the National Hockey League, and to me, he demonstrated why, and he gets my cheer. That wraps it up, guys. Our last summer show. Last morning show. Izzy can sleep in now. We can go to the noon. I can sleep in. Remus can sleep through. Next week, 12 to 3, and an ongoing basis, 12 to 3, on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'd like to thank David Minuk for sitting in. Ezzie Ginsberg, of course, Michael Remus. Our guest, Dan Wood of the Anaheim Ducks Radio Network. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, and the Certified General Accountants. It's been fun sitting in. I always like hosting. Can't wait for next week. We'll see you next week, Saturday, 12 noon, breaking down the Jets season, previewing training camp. It's going to be great.
Been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.